Welcome once again to Word on the Hills with me, Felicity Sidnell-Reed, my co-host, Gwyn Sheltimer, and our guest this week, Millie Morton. Each week we visit with an author who has regional or local connections. We hope to find out a little about her life, what prompts her to write. We give her an opportunity to read some of her work for us, and we're very pleased to have Millie Morton with us today. Welcome, Millie.
Thank you.
Millie Morton is a sociologist and author. Her publishing credits include articles in Expedition, Americas, and Horticulture. Recently, she's written numerous memoirs in Vista, the publication of the Seniors Association in Kingston, Ontario. Grace is her first full-length book. She grew up on a farm near Stirling, Ontario, and attended a one-room elementary school. After graduating from the University of Guelph, she earned a PhD at Cornell University. Working as a sociologist, she's traveled to many countries. She taught in Nigeria and the United States, did research in Latin America and Africa. In 2003, she received a centenary award from the University of Guelph for contributions to applied social science and international development. She's an enthusiast for small museums, local history, and nature walks, and lives with her husband in Kingston. So you called your recent book, Grace, A Teacher's Life, One-Room Schools, and a Century of Change in Ontario, and it's a book about Grace Morton, who lived from 1907 to 2008. Tell us about Grace and who she was.
Well, as you say, her lifespan spanned the 20th century. She was a teacher. She taught more than 25 years in various schools, most of them in one-room schools. She was also a wife, a mother, a grandmother, a great-grandmother. She was an innovator, a leader, a tireless volunteer, and a poet. And of course, she was my mother. When she was born, there were more than 5,000 rural schools in Ontario. And one teacher taught 8 grades in the same school.
Yes, in the same room, too.
In the same room. She walked to school because she boarded in the community at the time she was for the semester when she was teaching. And all the children walked to school. That's why there were schools with a 3-mile radius of children coming to that school. Most of the people lived in Ontario on farms at that time, and now Ontario is mostly urban. Today, education is much different as well, because when she was born and when she taught in the 1920s and 30s, the children used slates and very little paper. And now, of course, children are using tablets and computers. So I believe her stories are our social history. They're about how we used to live in Ontario and how we changed the way we live during the 20th century. Rudyard Kipling, who wrote many years ago, said, "If history were told in the form of stories, it would never be forgotten." So I've written one woman's stories from Ontario, what inspired her, and how she coped with the challenges that came up during her life in the classroom and the community and in her personal life.
Well, it certainly resonated with your readers, and I guess you were fortunate enough to hear many of these stories from your mother or perhaps from her students. But did you do more research on the wider history of one-room schools in Ontario?
Well, I did. I went to a library to try to find out how many one-room schools there were, because, of course, Ontario is the size of Western Europe. Mm-hmm. It's really a very big province.
Yeah.
And I wondered, how many schools were there? And I discovered there were more than 5,000.
Yeah.
I benefited a lot from my mother's prodigious memory. She had an excellent memory right up until the last week of her life.
Yes.
And so I started with her stories, and then I also had access to her scrapbooks. I was very fortunate in that she had a scrapbook of teaching memorabilia, which had photos from the early years, her first contract in 1928, which was 5 years before Ontario required that school boards offer contracts to teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And I had examples of her inspector's reports, letters that she had written, letters that had been written to her. I looked at local history books, many of them written about the time of Ontario Canada's centennial in the 1960s. I looked at newspapers on microfiche because I needed sometimes to get a feeling for what was the sentiment in Ontario at that particular time or in her community at that particular time. And I also did interviews with former students. That was really fun. And with colleagues and friends and other relatives who remembered things that she had done or ways that she had influenced them during their lives. So these were new stories to me, the stories that came from many of them from other people, because I was not home all the time and I didn't always hear the stories until later.
No, and anyway, they would give you a different perspective than your mum's perspective, really. Yes. And so what, in the end, prompted you to actually start writing the book?
Well, initially I thought I would write the stories for the family so that they wouldn't be lost.
Hmm.
And as I did this, that was my intention initially, was just to write the stories for the family. And then I realized that the stories were covering a century, that they were about the way we used to live. And I just had a strong feeling that I needed to put this into a book. It actually came to me as a kind of epiphany when I was driving over the Oak Hills on the way home from her celebration of life. It had been a gray, cloudy day, and as we came up over the hills there, south of Stirling, the sun broke through the clouds and spread a searchlight over the whole landscape.
And that's where your mum taught, wasn't it, Stirling?
She taught in Stirling and north of Stirling.
Yes.
And it was at that moment that I turned to my husband and I said, I have to write a book about Mom. I've never had an experience quite like that before. I just knew I had to do it. And it took me more than 4 years, but I did eventually get it completed.
Uh-huh. Well, would you read us now a piece about from the book? That would be great.
All right. I'd like to read a little section about something that happened when she was a teenager. Grace's hair was long, so long she could sit on it. Every morning she had to brush and braid it, pull the braids back and tie them at the back of her head. She had done this for years. She was 16 years old and she had never had a haircut. Margaret raised the subject one morning. Are you going to get your hair cut? I don't know, Grace said. I mentioned it once. I told my mother Yvonne had a bob, that long hair was old-fashioned, but she didn't want to listen. She said she likes long hair. Hers is even longer than mine. There's nothing I can do. Yvonne had showed her a magazine photo of Irene Castle, the celebrated dancer who popularized the bob. Her hair extended only to the bottom of her ears, and it was wavy. Grace wanted to have a Castle bob with bangs, so her hair could hang down on her forehead or be pushed back for a different look. Margaret had short hair, so did Maxine and Blanche. Haircuts cost money, and cash was always scarce in her family. She was grateful her parents had allowed her to study. Her mother was so old-fashioned, still wearing full-length dresses. She'd heard some old ladies say short hair made girls bold. Some of them even started smoking. It was a silly way to think. She knew she wasn't going to change just because she bobbed her hair. A few days later, she followed her dad to the barn so she'd have a chance to ask his opinion. Grace, I've been expecting you to ask, he said. What does your mother say? Oh, I don't think mother cares, Grace replied. She hoped her dad could influence a decision in her favor. He tried. The next day he took Grace aside for a quiet conversation. Your mother is very concerned, he said. She doesn't want you to get your hair cut. In fact, she could hardly sleep last night after we talked. Grace's heart sank. She couldn't question her parents. That just wasn't done. She'd have to wait until she was a teacher to get her hair cut. Several weeks later, during the summer holidays from school, she was helping her mother make red currant jam. Out of the blue, Susan said, that's her mother, "Do you still want to get your hair cut?" Grace was surprised. "Oh, yes," she said, "especially on hot days like this. I'm never going to change my mind." "I've been talking with other mothers," Susan said. "They've said things I never thought about, like how hard it is to find a hat that fits over long hair when it's piled up on the head." She hesitated, as if it was still hard to say what she had decided to say, then continued, "You can get your hair cut. Your dad agrees." Grace jumped up and down, thanking her mother. She didn't want to wait even one more day. At noon, her dad said he wouldn't be using the horses, so she hitched one to the Democrat, a light wagon on wheels, and headed for town. Only when she arrived in front of the barber shop did she remember it was Wednesday, a day when all the stores were closed in the afternoon. There was nobody in sight, and she was almost in tears right there in front of the closed shop. How could she go home without a haircut? Her mother might change her mind. Her friend Blanche Turpin had said her mother knew how to cut hair. She turned toward Blanche's home and tied the horse up outside. Mrs. Turpin was wonderful, even excited. She dropped whatever she was doing to cut Grace's hair, then rolled it in her fingers and pinned it to her head. Grace could hardly sit still while all this was happening. She felt as though a huge burden was being lifted from her. She and Blanche sat outside until her hair dried. Later, Mrs. Turpin combed it out and Grace looked into the mirror. She felt like a star who was about to prance on stage. Her hair was wavy and just covered her ears. She had bangs across her forehead. She loved her new look. Only when she was on the way home did she think about how her family might react. That night, as the family gathered for supper, everyone noticed how different she looked. Her mother admitted it looked nice and said nothing else. Her dad said, "I see you got your hair cut." Her siblings offered various opinions. Helen, her sister, was kind, though it was clear she needed time to get used to the change. Frank, her younger brother, laughed about the length of her neck and mimicked girlish gestures. Grace listened politely and said nothing. She had what she wanted. That's what counted.
You know, your mother was quite the lady, wasn't she? Thank you very much, Millie. And now we'll take a short break.